So neuropsychology, now we hear about psychology, we hear about neurology. Explain for me the interplay between the two as it applies to sports.
Oh, great question. So neuropsychology is kind of a combination of the two, where we focus on brain, understanding brain and behavioral relationships as it relates to neurologic injury or illness. So as it relates to concussion, it's kind of a perfect melding of the two specialties to assess, evaluate, and help treat concussion-related symptoms.
The NFL, the NBA, college sports, they've all instituted, even high school sports, have instituted concussion protocols where you've got to pass these tests, physical and I'm assuming sort of cognitive tests, in order to be released to play again. Do you find that across the board these things are testing for what they should be testing for, and that in the case of individuals who are getting concussions or suspected concussions, that some of these tests are looking for the right things?
That's a great question. I think you have to understand concussion. It is different in every individual, everybody, and it can be different within individuals as well. For people that have had multiple concussions, they can present with different symptoms at different times. So understanding that, there is a general set of guidelines. Most of them follow the consensus statement from the Symposium on Concussion and Sport. The last one was held in November of 2012, in which they outlined, they defined concussion, outlined symptoms, symptomatology, and treatment approach, and then return to play protocol. So most return to play protocols used in professional sports, collegiate and high school sports, and club sports follow those general guidelines as far as treatment and return to play.
As concussions have become a topic at the forefront of athletics over the last couple of years, how much more knowledge do we have about concussions than we did maybe, say, 20 years ago?
Oh, I think compared to 20 years ago, it's a night and day difference in our understanding of what a concussion actually is, what impact it has on brain function and physical activity as well, and then more importantly on the recovery process and treatment approach. I think even over the last 5 years, we've made significant improvement there. You know, first acknowledging and understanding that an individual has suffered a concussion and then taking the appropriate treatment course is important. We used to think years ago that somebody had to rest and do nothing for an extended period of time. We're finding that that's actually counterproductive, and that rest is good for a certain period, but then we need to reintegrate activity in a graded fashion, both physical and mental related activity. This is more important for our young athletes, kids, our student athletes, that we need to return to school, return to learn before we actually return to play. So I think over the past 5 years, we're better understanding what treatment approach and what long-term ramification, you know, recurring concussion can have.
Just less than an hour ago, I was talking about Kevin Love, and they replayed the incident that caused his apparent concussion, and it doesn't look like the most severe impact we've even seen this postseason on an NBA floor, but he stayed in the game, he made a three-pointer, then you know, he was kind of blinking away stars or whatever, and they decided, he and the trainers decided that it was better that he be removed from the game. It didn't look all that severe. Do we find that this is the case with certain concussions in certain individuals, where the impact doesn't have to be one of those obvious, you got knocked out and it looks like it's really bad, in order for there to actually be danger and damage?
Yes, that's a good point that you bring up, and I think you're on the spot with that comment. Less than 10% of concussions result in loss of consciousness. So typically we equate that with the concussion, and in fact that's actually a fairly rare occurrence. We know that as individuals have more concussions or repeat concussion episodes, they tend to be more sensitive to lighter impact or lighter injury mechanism, and then can become symptomatic with you know, a small blow or small contact. So I think that's an important thing that we're learning over time as we study concussions. Lots of times the initial symptoms, we'd look for loss of consciousness. That's what we equate it with. But symptoms present at different times following a subconcussive episode or subconcussive blow. And so an individual may be able to continue on and play, and then the symptoms build and intensify as they continue to play or participate, and you may not fully detect the concussion-related symptoms until, you know, minutes later or a short period of time later. And then it's you have to take the appropriate steps to remove the player and do a formal evaluation and plan a treatment. I know the NBA has a specific concussion policy that they follow that involves neuropsychologists, neurologists, and physical medicine doctors. So they have a very specific return to play protocol that they utilize.
If any of our listeners are out there thinking that they might need to get checked out for a concussion or even post-concussive symptoms, what's the best way to get a hold of you at Utah Valley Sports Medicine?
Our best contact number is 801-357-1200.
801-357-1200, Intermountain Utah Valley Sports Medicine. That's Dr. Robert Burr, a neuropsychologist. Thanks for taking the time, Doc.
Thank you. You have a good day.
You
Thanks,
too.
Doc.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff, as always, from our experts, Dr. Robert Burr and Intermountain Utah Valley Sports Medicine. If you have a concussion, think you have a concussion, maybe once you had a concussion and there's lingering symptoms, give them a phone call.